You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
As it's a Wednesday, it's time to speak to an investment professional from Miton Optimal. And this week we're speaking to Peter Geekie-Cobb, Senior Fund Manager at Miton Optimal in the United Kingdom. I want to bring up a subject that's been with us for years now and probably will still be with us for a number of years, and that's Brexit. And the reason I want to bring it up, even though it's gone a little bit quiet, is because there were sort of rumours in the market in London a few days ago that the interest rates would be cut in the UK. Mr. Mark Carney, he may have given us a couple of hints. And I thought maybe he's preempting something, because the uncertainty surrounding Brexit and the economy is palpable, and maybe he's cutting rates just in case to cushion the blow. Or am I being fanciful?
No, I think that's right, Lindsay. I mean, we had quite weak fourth quarter GDP numbers, particularly the back end of the fourth quarter. Although in aggregate they were better than expected, you know, the trend in the last 3 months has been weaker output. Today also we had the inflation numbers, which came out, weaker than expected, below the Bank of England's target and below the consensus. There are two or three MPC members led by Michael Saunders, who are, you know, really talking up the case for a rate cut. Yeah. And I think, you know, because Mark Carney has been so downbeat on the UK, you know, when talking about Brexit and the aftermath of Brexit and so forth, I think a one-off rate cut, 25 basis points down to 50, is becoming increasingly likely. Now, whether this is a sort of trough in growth and the lead up to Brexit, has seen manufacturers slow down, and whether we get a bounce now that there is more political certainty, that remains to be seen. But I think if they were to cut rates today for insurance purposes, you know, rather like the Fed did in the second half of last year, they cut rates 50 basis points between June and the year end, just as insurance. I think that would perfectly plausible. Interesting, today after the inflation numbers, sterling sold off a fair bit following the inflation data, implying that the market was pricing in a rate cut. But it's back to sort of unchanged on the day. I think on the UK, a rate cut would be perfectly understandable.
Yes, I think so too. Brexit has been put on the back burner a little bit. Obviously, stuff going on in the background, people furiously getting ready for the big date, which is only 2 weeks and 2 days away now, January the 31st. The main focus seems to be now whether Big Ben is going to bong on Brexit Day, 12 o'clock midnight Brussels time and 11 p.m. UK time. I think it's going to cost £120,000 or something just to make it bong. This is all symbolic. They say 500, yeah. But that really is... there's all sorts of other things because of delays and stuff. But let's call it a couple of £100,000, and there's going to have to be some crowdfunding to get it going. That's a little side issue. But do you think it's going to be like Y2K? Do you remember 20 years? Maybe you don't remember 20 years ago, Y2K, when everyone said, well, this is it.
I remember it very well.
Yeah, everything's going to shut down. And then the clock ticked across from 19 to 20 into the next century, and absolutely nothing happened. Do you think there's a chance that absolutely nothing will happen with Brexit, and it just means that we have to get into a different queue at the airport?
I do think that. And of course, you know, we have to remember that we've got a 11-month transition period. So nothing, well, it'll be, 11 months. Come 1st of February, nothing's going to change. Everything's still in place until a proposed deal is done for the end of 2020. Markets are pricing in, the Brexit deal is done, 80-seat majority in Parliament, some political uncertainty out of the way. But we've still got another 11 months ahead of us to negotiate the trade deal and everything post-Brexit. But in the very short term, nothing will change, on the 1st of February.
Good.
But, we've got to, the UK's got to negotiate a trade deal, and the government seemed pretty positive that that's straightforward. The new EU Commission president is much more sceptical about it. So, you know, there's more to-ing and fro-ing to come over the course of this calendar year. But in the very short term, I don't think that there's anything that should be too untoward.
Good. Well, that's an encouraging sign. And yeah, hopefully we don't rest on our laurels like we did before and wait 3 years until taking some action. And Boris Johnson, who's a bit more of a go-getter than previous leaders, I think will get it done. I mean, I'm not a particular fan of his, but I do think he will get it done. And he seems absolutely convinced that he will be able to. Now, what about something else that has been a perma feature in our lives over the last nearly 2 years now? And that's Trump and trade and tariffs, because apparently phase one is going to be signed off today, but I wonder what phase one is. Is it a ceasefire? Is it a genuine agreement on certain types of goods? And there's a couple of other levels to go in the future. What is your interpretation of this almost soap opera type farce that we've had?
I think there's some stability here. If Trump signs the deal phase one today, it is all about tariffs. I wonder whether there's a bit more going on here longer term, and that is whether the Trump administration are trying to get the Chinese to revalue their currency. I was reading something on Bloomberg today, I think it was Jonathan Authors, reminding us of the Plaza Accord. When in the 80s, the Japanese were booming, they were copying manufacturing ideas, and we had the Louvre Accord, where the yen appreciated dramatically to offset the trade problems that in the 80s the Americans were having with the Japanese. And there are lots of parallels to that. So I think phase one, that's good news. So that's going to reduce proposed tariffs, but I think phase two is much more about the relationship between the dollar and the Chinese yuan, because that's what I think the Americans are concerned about. They call it currency manipulation and so forth, and if Americans can do a sort of similar deal with Chinese as they did with Japan in the early 80s on the Plaza Accord, then I think sort of quietly that's where they're trying to head to.
Peter, there was some action in the Chinese currency market a few days ago because the Americans officially took China off their list of countries that manipulate their currencies, and there was some action. Maybe you could describe that.
Yes, I mean I think that is all part of the grandstanding to sign phase one. But whether that problem of currency manipulation, goes away is something I doubt. The Chinese currency has appreciated. It's back to sort of the pre-tariff argument that when it reached its peak a few months ago, we saw the rate at above, almost 720. Back in August of last year, and sort of since then, when we were at the peak of the interaction between the US and China, it's rallied back down to below 690. I think that's an important factor for US negotiators.
Anything else you're looking towards in 2020? Is it still wait and see when it comes to all the factors that we've just been referring to? Or have you got any fresh ideas after a lovely Christmas break?
I think what's interesting is that if one looks at economic growth globally last year, it was a game of two halves and two geographical areas. So in the first half, the Anglo-Saxon economies, the US, the UK, way outperformed the consensus forecast, surprise to the upside, whereas Europe was going the other way. This in the second half of last year, Europe way outperformed market consensus on economic data, and the UK and the US went the other way. So in aggregate, we had quite a smooth you know, sort of outperformance of global growth in aggregate. You know, I think the, the slowdown we've seen in manufacturing in the US and some parts of Europe, I think is troughing out. I think that the central banks are going to obviously remain supportive. We've got the prospect of fiscal easing, which we had post-Trump election in the US, but we've got the prospect of fiscal easing in the UK. Germany is under huge pressure to start spending the surpluses that they've been accumulating over the last 5 years. So I think while equity markets, you know, are probably fully priced on current multiples, I think the growth outlook, you know, is reasonably benign, unless we get a spike in inflation and central banks feel that they have to respond to higher inflation. But it doesn't look like that's likely anytime soon. You know, inflation remains, you know, pretty subdued. So I think the global economy is, is in reasonably good shape.
Very good. Let's hope you're right. And let's hope 2020 is as boring and benign as 2019 was for most of the year. Peter, thank you very much for your analysis. That's Peter Geekie-Cobb, Senior Fund Manager at Mitel Optimal in the United Kingdom. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.